This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hitting the news you might have missed. It's Denton's Daily News.
All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, let's start with a little bit of women's basketball. We talked a lot about the men's hoops yesterday. Now, the women's path to a gold is significantly easier. The rest of the world has not got up to speed the way that the men's game has. So they cruised past Japan 102-76. Aja Wilson, who plays for the Las Vegas Aces, had 24 points and 13 rebounds. I don't know how anybody is going to guard her on the women's side this year.
She's the best player in the WNBA, right?
Yeah, she is. She's a multi-time MVP winner.
Yeah. Because one of the Caitlin Clark games that I watched, they were playing Las Vegas, and it was actually a competitive game, but man, she was impossible. I mean, impossible to stop. How big is she?
I believe she is around 6'7". I think that's
really?
What her height
six,
is listed
seven?
At.
Isn't that just monstrous in the WNBA?
Oh, excuse me. She's 6'4". So not
six,
nearly
four.
As tall as I thought.
That makes
she looks
sense.
Like she's 6'7", the way she towers over everybody else in the league.
Yeah. So there's no competition for
no.
the U.S. women?
No.
Right. So it was really important to leave the biggest marketing chip off the table. To pull it off the table, so to get the absolute best 15 players or whatever it was to ensure that you win gold. Couldn't they have just basically sent over, a couple of the all-stars and then gone straight marketing the rest of the way and still won it?
Yeah, they could.
Put Reese on there, put Caitlin Clark on there. Put, I don't know who else, I can't name the other players.
Well, I mean, the list kind of stops there, but you are correct. They could have sent Aja Wilson, Caitlin Clark, Kelsey Plum, Angel Reese, and me over there, and they would have won gold.
Yeah. You may have not been eligible. Although, these days, who knows? Okay, go ahead.
Close your ears if you're watching on tape delay, but Katie Ledecky was in action this morning in Paris for the semi for the 1,500-meter swim. She crushed it in her heat. She recorded a time of 15 minutes, 47 seconds, 0.43. She was 20 seconds ahead of second place.
Oh, my God. In the 1,500.
In the 1,500, yeah.
I mean, I actually don't really know what that means, but it sounds like it's unbelievable. Like, she was basically done while the others still had multiple, you know, trips of the pool left.
Yeah, she effectively 20 seconds at a distance. I mean, second place had just hit the flip turn by the time she finished, effectively.
Wow. She didn't win her first event. She had a bronze medal in that event, but that was not her strong event, correct?
It was one of her strong events, but not the way that she's dominated this event. That was the only event where she had legit competition between the two ladies that finished first and second. This one, if you combine all of the heats, she finished 5 seconds ahead of second place, and they didn't swim in the same heat. I imagine if she was swimming next to her, she would have beat her, too, by more than 5 seconds.
Right. All right.
I mean, 1,500 meters.
I am interested in watching her. And the other, is it Phoebe Bacon? Is that her name?
My swimming knowledge starts and ends with Katie Ledecky.
I'm trying to pick out the two little flower parishioners. That's my parish. And from my hood. I mean, it's amazing, the swimming talent in this area. I mean, we talk about the basketball talent, the lacrosse talent in this area. The swimming talent, ridiculous, between here and Baltimore, right? I mean, I don't know if it's... I would imagine that California's probably the swimming state in this country more than any other. Is that right? Maybe Florida?
California, Florida. Fun fact, we actually have a somebody on staff here that raced against Michael Phelps.
There you go. Who's that?
Matt Essek. He lost.
Matt Essick raced against. He's that good of a swimmer.
I should rephrase that.
Or was he six?
He was in
after
an event.
A swim lesson.
No, it was an event. He traveled for it. It was an event where Michael Phelps was at.
Wow.
He didn't race side by side next to him, but it was like a national thing, and he raced in that.
All right. What else?
Coco Gauff, I'm giving you this story because it's a big name. I don't care about Olympic tennis. You don't care about Olympic tennis.
I don't.
There's
but
so
I'm
many...
surprised she lost.
I am
she
too.
And LeBron were the flag bearers during opening ceremonies, right?
Yeah, and she lost in straight sets to Dana Vekic of Croatia. But in the world of tennis, there are so many other big events that we care so much more about. So it stinks, but like Olympic tennis is so far down the totem pole.
She apparently was upset about something, and I'm just reading this for the first time. I'll just read it out loud. She lost to, as you mentioned, Dana Vekic in the third round of the singles at the Olympics. This is Coco Gauff, and it was largely in part to a controversial call made by an official that swung the momentum of the match and left Gauff in tears. During the match, the umpire called a ball out before Gauff could return it, making the call in her backswing. That caused the American to miss her shot. However, Gauff believed that the ball was in and that the missed call interfered with her attempt. After arguing the call for quite a while, Gauff ultimately walked away with frustrated tears in her eyes after proclaiming to herself that this always happens to me on the court. Yeah, she got upset at another event. I forget what it was. It may have been at the Open last year. She was really upset last year at the Open in that first round match against that German journeyman doubles player who just took so much time in between points. I actually thought it was a brilliant strategy, and we talked about it on the show at the time. But I'm missing. During the match, the umpire called a ball out before Gauff could return it. So the ball was out from the other side. Okay. That caused her to miss her shot. What happened? Did they go back and rule that the ball was in on replay? If the ball was out, didn't she win the point? I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm missing something from that. But she apparently was upset.
Yeah, she
I like Coco Gauff. But I like the major. I don't even like the majors as much as I used to. But I have not paid attention at all to the tennis. You're right. Nothing.
No, nothing. I mean, I got 3-on-3 women's basketball going on NBC right now. I thought I was going to be watching Bilal Coulibaly in France. Team USA is losing to Germany. That doesn't seem right. Haley Van Lith is on this team.
Who is?
Haley Van Lith, the LSU guard, Louisville.
Oh, yeah,
2 years
the one
ago.
That all the guys liked.
Yes, and the one that gave us a great meme while defending Caitlin Clark. Where she just threw her hands up because she could not stop her.
Right.
I saw this story today. I don't have a ton of information, but I do find it hilarious. Multiple Chinese swimmers had tested positive leading up to the Olympics with trace amounts of anabolic steroids. And apparently some of them tested positive in secret. There's like this whole back and forth between the U.S. Doping Association, the World Doping. Like, it's a whole big thing. But one of the reasons that some of these athletes claimed they tested positive was due to hamburgers that they ate, claiming that there must have been traces of anabolic steroids in hamburgers that they consumed.
Well, don't with ground beef in some of the, I guess, some of the cattle, I guess, aren't there. I believe that that actually can be true, and I don't know why I know that. I just when you said that and tied it to burgers, and I saw it in your news story right before the segment. I think that there are occasionally steroids pumped into some of the sources for ground beef.
That
particular.
Is true.
I could be wrong about that.
No,
maybe
you're right. There's a steroid hormone that, with certain companies, is implanted into beef cattle for
okay. So, is it possible that they're right? Probably not. It's the Chinese.
Yeah, probably not, because that the steroid pumping into beef seems like much more of an American thing, whereas other countries that do not or have certain regulations to where that sort of thing is not allowed. So unless they stopped by the U.S. en route to France, I don't know what the quickest flight path is. I would guess it's not that. But if they did stop by and like I don't know, Kansas to get a quick burger before heading over to Paris. Maybe that happened, but it seems very unlikely.
What's your favorite burger? Like fast casual, not fast food. What's your favorite burger?
Fast casual? Would you consider?
I would count Five Guys as fast casual.
Yeah, I would say Five Guys is up there. I mean, I do enjoy like a good sit down burger every now and then. I grew up by Glory Days, so like there are certain Glory Days burgers that I enjoy, but Five Guys is probably at the top.
I'll tell you what, I think Le Diplomat has the best burger in town, but I would not consider that to be a fast casual burger. That's more of a restaurant burger.
I wish you told me that 3 weeks ago.
Oh, right, when you went down.
Because I went there with my fiance.
Well, I mean, yeah. So there's a new burger place in town. It's in Georgetown. It's called 7th Street Burger. It's a New York place. And we went there over the weekend. Really good. Really good fast casual burgers. It's a Five Guys, you know, setup. It's that kind of place. But I thought it was excellent. I had heard about it. They opened up in Georgetown maybe a month ago, 2 months ago. It's a New York thing. First location. I'm pretty sure it's the first location in DC. I could be wrong about that. But 7th Street Burger, Wisconsin Avenue, Georgetown.
How crazy do you get with burger toppings? Do you get like all the way wacky, or are you pretty normal?
I mean, no, I'm not over the top. I mean, there are certain restaurant burgers where they have kind of an idea and a certain kind of sauce and a certain kind of mixture of whether it's onions or, you know, onions, tomatoes, certain types of lettuce, certain types of, you know, maybe they'll go, you know, another, you know, maybe they'll go bacon or something. I'll eat any burger. Like the Duke's Grocery downtown has a really good burger. I would call that more of a restaurant burger than maybe a fast casual. I don't know. Maybe that's kind of in between. And there's a lot of stuff on that burger, but it's great. Now, it can be kind of a messy burger because there's so much stuff on it, but it's a really good burger. Have you ever had Duke's Grocery?
I have not, which is a shame because it's literally about a football field behind me in Southeast. So it's like right here in Navy Yard. So I need to get down there.
That's a really good burger with a lot of stuff on it. But in terms of like going into Five Guys to get a burger or now 7th Street, which I'll go back to after the one experience that I had, which was really good. I don't know, chopped onions, ketchup, mustard, boom. Call it a day.
That'll do it. I always have bacon on there. I've gotten pretty wacky in the past. I don't mind a little bit if a restaurant provides jam for a little bit of salty sweetness going on there. And I had an Elvis burger once, which is, you got to be pretty out there to enjoy one of those, but it was pretty good.
Yeah, this place is like one of those. I mean, it was humming in there. I mean, the Uber Eats guys were lined up. So clearly this is becoming popular. The place itself, you couldn't get a seat. Now, this was on the weekend, but good spot. I would recommend it. 7th Street Burger, Georgetown, Wisconsin Avenue. I don't know what block it is. It's probably, you know, it's just before kind of probably three blocks, four blocks up from M, something like that. What else you got?
All right, one final story. I'm going to save another one for our third hour because I think we can do something with it. But I saw this morning. John Gruden is petitioning the Supreme Court of Nevada to grant an in-bank reconsideration. I don't understand legal terms. Sorry if I butchered that, Neil in Rockville. If granted, the justices in Nevada, the Supreme Court, would hear his case. If that does come to fruition, we likely get a little bit more information. Not that we care anymore now because Dan is gone, but we get a little bit more information about Dan Snyder and how he might have sabotaged John Gruden's job inadvertently or on purpose. We don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm almost forgetting the details now. You know, it was the emails with Bruce Allen that ended up really sinking John Gruden. And the big question was, how did those emails get exposed? You know, how did they And there's, you know, certainly a lot of people that believe that Dan may have been behind it. I'm almost forgetting, though, the real detail behind all of this. And to your point, I just don't care as much anymore. Some of that stuff is interesting. And there will be down the road, even without Dan's participation, there are going to be some documentaries. There's going to be a 30 for 30 at the very least on what happened to this organization during his 25 years, because it's truly one of the all-time, you know, top to bottom spirals in the history of team sports. You had an organization that was not only among the most popular in the league, among those most popular just in sports in North America, second, you know, sometimes number one in revenue generation, and just how one person more than any other was able to essentially burn it down to the ground in a quarter century or less. Like I've said for many years, that's a Harvard Business School, that's a Wharton case study and how not to operate a professional sports franchise that when you acquire is at the top. You know, it's like you really don't even have to do anything and it's just going to continue to flourish. Somebody's going to do the 30 for 30. Somebody's going to do the HBO documentary on this. And some of the stuff that'll come off of it will be what happened here in the last few years. A lot of it will be, and the John Gruden stuff may be a part of that, although really that alone could be a 30 for 30. How John Gruden went from this incredibly popular broadcaster to a head coach with a 10-year deal worth $100 million, right? Wasn't it $10 million a year for 10 years with the Raiders?
Yeah, I think that's it correct. Was. Yeah, you're right.
To completely out of the league with, like, very little chance, it would seem, to rejoin it. Andrew Golden covers the Nats for the Washington Post. A devastating loss last night, but also a trade and perhaps more to come before the deadline today. He'll be our guest when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app.
Hitting the news you might have missed. It's Denton's Daily News.
All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, let's start with a little bit of women's basketball. We talked a lot about the men's hoops yesterday. Now, the women's path to a gold is significantly easier. The rest of the world has not got up to speed the way that the men's game has. So they cruised past Japan 102-76. Aja Wilson, who plays for the Las Vegas Aces, had 24 points and 13 rebounds. I don't know how anybody is going to guard her on the women's side this year.
She's the best player in the WNBA, right?
Yeah, she is. She's a multi-time MVP winner.
Yeah. Because one of the Caitlin Clark games that I watched, they were playing Las Vegas, and it was actually a competitive game, but man, she was impossible. I mean, impossible to stop. How big is she?
I believe she is around 6'7". I think that's
really?
What her height 6'7"? Is listed at.
6'7"? Isn't that just monstrous in the WNBA?
Oh, excuse me. She's 6'4". So not 6'4". Nearly as tall as I thought.
That makes
she looks
sense.
Like she's 6'7", the way she towers over everybody else in the league.
Yeah. So there's no competition for the U.S. women?
No.
Right. So it was really important to leave the biggest marketing chip off the table. To pull it off the table, so to get the absolute best 15 players or whatever it was to ensure that you win gold. Couldn't they have just basically sent over, a couple of the all-stars and then gone straight marketing the rest of the way and still won it?
Yeah, they could
put Reese on there, put Caitlin Clark on there, put, I don't know who else, I can't name the other players.
Well, I mean, the list kind of stops there, but you are correct. They could have sent Aja Wilson, Caitlin Clark, Kelsey Plum, Angel Reese, and me over there, and they would have won gold.
Yeah. You may have not been eligible. Although, these days, who knows? Okay, go ahead.
Close your ears if you're watching on tape delay, but Katie Ledecky was in action this morning in Paris for the semi for the 1,500-meter swim. She crushed it in her heat. She recorded a time of 15 minutes, 47 seconds, 0.43. She was 20 seconds ahead of second place
In the 1,500.
In the 1,500, yeah.
I mean, I actually don't really know what that means, but it sounds like it's unbelievable. Like she was basically done while the others still had multiple, you know, trips of the pool left.
Yeah, she effectively 20 seconds at a distance. I mean, second place had just hit the flip turn by the time she finished, effectively.
Wow. She didn't win her first event. She had a bronze medal in that event, but that was not her strong event, correct?
It was one of her strong events, but not the way that she's dominated this event. That was the only event where she had legit competition between the two ladies that finished first and second. This one, if you combine all of the heats, she finished 5 seconds ahead of second place, and they didn't swim in the same heat. I imagine if she was swimming next to her, she would have beat her, too, by more than 5 seconds.
Right. All right.
I mean, 1,500 meters.
I am interested in watching her. And the other, is it Phoebe Bacon? Is that her name?
My swimming knowledge starts and ends with Katie Ledecky.
I'm trying to pick out the two Little Flower parishioners. That's my parish. And from my hood. I mean, it's amazing, the swimming talent in this area. I mean, we talk about the basketball talent, the lacrosse talent in this area. The swimming talent, ridiculous, between here and Baltimore, right? I mean, I don't know if it's... I would imagine that California's probably the swimming state in this country more than any other. Is that right? Maybe Florida?
California, Florida. Fun fact, we actually have a somebody on staff here that raced against Michael Phelps.
There you go. Who's that?
Matt Essick. He lost.
Matt Essick raced against... He's that good of a swimmer?
I should rephrase that.
Or was he six?
He was in
after
an event.
A swim lesson.
No, it was an event. He traveled for it. It was an event where Michael Phelps was at. Wow. He didn't race side by side next to him, but it was like a national thing, and he raced in that.
All right, what else?
Coco Gauff. I'm giving you this story because it's a big name. I don't care about Olympic tennis. You don't care about Olympic tennis.
I don't.
But I'm surprised
she lost.
I am
she
too.
And LeBron were the flag bearers during opening ceremonies, right?
Yeah, and she lost in straight sets to Dana Vekic of Croatia. But in the world of tennis, there are so many other big events that we care so much more about. So it stinks, but like Olympic tennis is so far down the totem pole.
She apparently was upset about something, and I'm just reading this for the first time. I'll just read it out loud. She lost to, as you mentioned, Dana Vekic in the third round of the singles at the Olympics. This is Coco Gauff, and it was largely in part to a controversial call made by an official that swung the momentum of the match and left Gauff in tears. During the match, the umpire called a ball out before Gauff could return it, making the call in her backswing. That caused the American to miss her shot. However, Gauff believed that the ball was in and that the missed call interfered with her attempt. After arguing the call for quite a while, Gauff ultimately walked away with frustrated tears in her eyes after proclaiming to herself that this always happens to me on the court. Yeah, she got upset at another event, and I forget what it was. It may have been at the Open last year. She was really upset last year at the Open in that first round match against that German journeyman doubles player who just took so much time in between points. I actually thought it was a brilliant strategy, and we talked about it on the show at the time. But I'm missing, during the match, the umpire called a ball out before Gauff could return it. So the ball was out from the other side. Okay. That caused her to miss her shot. What happened? Did they go back and rule that the ball was in on replay? If the ball was out, didn't she win the point? I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm missing something from that. But she apparently was upset.
Yeah, she
I like Coco Gauff. But I like the major. I don't even like the majors as much as I used to. But I have not paid attention at all to the tennis. You're right. Nothing.
No, nothing. I mean, I got 3-on-3 women's basketball going on NBC right now. I thought I was going to be watching Bilal Coulibaly in France. Team USA is losing to Germany. That doesn't seem right. Haley Van Lith is on this team.
Who is?
Haley Van Lith, the LSU guard, Louisville.
Oh, yeah,
2 years
the one
ago.
That all the guys liked.
Yes, and the one that gave us a great meme while defending Caitlin Clark, where she just threw her hands up because she could not stop her.
Right.
I saw this story today. I don't have a ton of information, but I do find it hilarious. Multiple Chinese swimmers had tested positive leading up to the Olympics with trace amounts of anabolic steroids. And apparently some of them tested positive in secret. There's like this whole back and forth between the U.S. Doping Association, the World Doping, like it's a whole big thing. But one of the reasons that some of these athletes claimed they tested positive was due to hamburgers that they ate, claiming that there must have been traces of anabolic steroids in hamburgers that they consumed.
Well, don't with ground beef in some of the, I guess, some of the cattle, I guess, aren't there. I believe that that actually can be true. And I don't know why I know that. I just when you said that and tied it to burgers and I saw it in your news story right before the segment, I think that there are occasionally steroids pumped into some of the sources for ground beef.
That
particular.
Is true.
I could be wrong about that.
No, maybe you're right. There's a steroid hormone that with certain companies is implanted into beef cattle for
okay, so consumption. Is it possible that they're right? Probably not. It's the Chinese.
Yeah, probably not, because that the steroid pumping into beef seems like much more of an American thing, whereas other countries that do not or have certain regulations to where that sort of thing is not allowed. So unless they stopped by the U.S. en route to France, I don't know what the quickest flight path is. I would guess it's not that. But if they did stop by in, like, I don't know, Kansas to get a quick burger before heading over to Paris, maybe that happened, but it seems very unlikely.
What's your favorite burger? Like fast casual, not fast food. What's your favorite burger?
Fast casual. Would you consider?
I would count Five Guys as fast casual. Not
yeah, I would say Five Guys is up there. I mean, I do enjoy like a good sit down burger every now and then. I grew up by Glory Days, so like there are certain Glory Days burgers that I enjoy, but Five Guys is probably at the top.
I'll tell you what, I think Le Diplomat has the best burger in town, but I would not consider that to be a fast casual burger. That's more of a restaurant burger.
I wish you told me that 3 weeks ago.
Oh, right, when you went down.
Because I went there with my fiance.
Well, I mean, yeah. So there's a new burger place in town. It's in Georgetown. It's called 7th Street Burger. It's a New York place. And we went there over the weekend. Really good. Really good fast casual burgers. It's a Five Guys, you know, setup. It's that kind of place. But I thought it was excellent. I had heard about it. They opened up in Georgetown maybe a month ago, 2 months ago. It's a New York thing. First location. I'm pretty sure it's the first location in D.C. I could be wrong about that. But 7th Street Burger, Wisconsin Avenue, Georgetown.
How crazy do you get with burger toppings? Do you get like all the way wacky or are you pretty normal?
I mean, no, I'm not over the top. I mean, there are certain restaurant burgers where they have kind of an idea and a certain kind of sauce and a certain kind of mixture of whether it's onions or, you know, onions, tomatoes, certain types of lettuce, certain types of, you know, maybe they'll go, you know, another, you know, maybe they'll go bacon or something. I'll eat any burger. Like the Duke's Grocery downtown has a really good burger. I would call that more of a restaurant burger than maybe a fast casual. I don't know. Maybe that's kind of in between. And there's a lot of stuff on that burger, but it's great. Now, it can be kind of a messy burger because there's so much stuff on it, but it's a really good burger. Have you ever had Duke's Grocery?
I have not, which is a shame because it's literally about a football field behind me in Southeast. So it's like right here in Navy Yard. So I need to get down there.
That's a really good burger with a lot of stuff on it. But in terms of like going into Five Guys to get a burger or now 7th Street, which I'll go back to after the one experience that I had, which was really good. I don't know, chopped onions, ketchup, mustard, boom. Call it a day.
That'll do it. I always have bacon on there. I've gotten pretty wacky in the past. I don't mind a little bit if a restaurant provides jam for a little bit of salty sweetness going on there. And I had an Elvis burger once, which is, you got to be pretty out there to enjoy one of those, but it was pretty good.
Yeah, this place is like one of those. I mean, it was humming in there. I mean, the Uber Eats guys were lined up. So clearly this is becoming popular. The place itself, you couldn't get a seat. Now, this was on the weekend, but good spot. I would recommend it. 7th Street Burger, Georgetown, Wisconsin Avenue. I don't know what block it is. It's probably, you know, it's just before kind of probably three blocks, four blocks up from M. Something like that. What else you got?
All right, one final story. I'm going to save another one for our third hour because I think we can do something with it. But I saw this morning. John Gruden is petitioning the Supreme Court of Nevada to grant an in-bank reconsideration. I don't understand legal terms. Sorry if I butchered that, Neil and Rockville. If granted, the justices in Nevada, the Supreme Court, would hear his case. If that does come to fruition, we likely get a little bit more information. Not that we care anymore now because Dan is gone, but we get a little bit more information about Dan Snyder and how he might have sabotaged John Gruden's job inadvertently or on purpose. We don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm almost forgetting the details now. You know, it was the emails with Bruce Allen that ended up really sinking John Gruden. And the big question was, how did those emails get exposed? You know, how did they, and there's, you know, certainly a lot of people that believe that Dan may have been behind it. I'm almost forgetting, though, the real detail behind all of this. And to your point, I just don't care as much anymore. Some of that stuff is interesting. And there will be down the road, even without Dan's participation, there are going to be some documentaries. There's going to be a 30 for 30 at the very least on what happened to this organization during his 25 years, because it's truly one of the all-time, you know, top to bottom spirals in the history of team sports. You had an organization that was not only among the most popular in the league, among those most popular just in sports in North America, second, you know, sometimes number one in revenue generation, and just how one person more than any other was able to essentially burn it down to the ground in a quarter century or less. Like I've said for many years, that's a Harvard Business School, that's a Wharton case study in how not to operate a professional sports franchise that when you acquire is at the top. You know, it's like you really don't even have to do anything and it's just going to continue to flourish. Somebody's going to do the 30 for 30. Somebody's going to do the HBO documentary on this. And some of the stuff that'll come off of it will be what happened here in the last few years. A lot of it will be, and the John Gruden stuff may be a part of that. Although really that alone could be a 30 for 30. How John Gruden went from this incredibly popular broadcaster to a head coach with a 10-year deal worth $100 million, right? Wasn't it $10 million a year for 10 years with the Raiders?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, you're right.
To completely out of the league with like very little chance, it would seem, to rejoin it. Andrew Golden covers the Nats for the Washington Post. A devastating loss last night, but also a trade and perhaps more to come before the deadline today. He'll be our guest when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app.